So we're continuing our series that we started last week, I think, looking at different attributes of God. It's interesting, Dave used the reminded us of that idea of love is. And over the next few weeks, we're thinking about how we'd complete the sentence that starts, God is. What do we know about God? And this morning, we're thinking about the amazing reality that God is love. And the implications for us, the challenges that that raises for how we live in response to that God. And the passage that Sue read to us earlier is an amazing passage about love. It is full of descriptions of love at work. It speaks about how we are to respond to love. I don't know if you were counting as Sue was reading, but the word love occurs 32 times in those 15 verses. 19 times it appears as a verb, an action that is carried out. 13 times it's a noun, speaking about something that exists. It's something that does things, it's something that is. 32 times in 15 verses. To put that in context, some of you will be familiar with the Old Testament book, Song of Solomon, sometimes known as Song of Songs. Recognises a book that speaks powerfully and vividly about love. But the word there only occurs 28 times throughout the entire 8 chapters of the book. So here we've got a condensed description of what love is about. From a biblical perspective, from a godly perspective, from a this is who God is perspective. So it's a great place to start. And these verses contain words of encouragement. It tells us a lot about God. It challenges us in our understanding of what love is about. It reminds us of what God has done, and it asks questions as to how we should respond to that love. And it starts with an amazing and challenging claim. A claim that when I was looking at, I was thinking, hang on, how can that actually be? Because it says that everyone who loves are children of God. So to love, you are a child of God. And that if we don't love, we don't know God. And when we stop and think about that, instead of just glossing over it and going on to the next sentence, we're brought up short as we think about its implication. And how controversial it actually sounds. If you ask a bridegroom on his wedding day whether he loves his bride, he would probably look at you in amazement that you had to ask the question. A friend of Richard's, got married yesterday. And I guess if I'd gone up to Loz, bizarre name, but he's an interesting guy, if I'd gone up to him and said, do you love your bride? He'd say, of course I do. I'm marrying her. If you speak to an elderly couple as they celebrate their diamond wedding, they better tell you stories of how they had seen love demonstrated to each other over the decades. If you speak to a mother and ask her whether she loves her children, you would be surprised if she said no. And we have sayings and songs about love. Love makes the world go round, so they tell me. So something that many would recognise is at the heart of so much that is good, the basis for real and lasting relationships. But here, we are told that if you love, you're a child of God, which implies that if you don't have a personal relationship with God, you can't really love. How do you respond to such a statement? Now, elsewhere in the Bible, we have references to people who don't love God, who don't have that relationship with God, loving each other and recognising the reality of that. So the biblical story, the wider biblical story, and our own experiences tell us that love does appear in many different contexts, and not just among those who know and believe in God. So what is being said here? I think it's speaking about a particular expression of love, a love that is higher than other loves. Dave was talking about different ways in which we can think about love, and we can love family, and we can love friends, and we can love phones, and we can love, I'm not sure Dave was convinced by that one, but apparently people do, and we can love chocolate, and, you know, and he talks about the idea that sometimes we misuse the word, and there's different levels that we apply it. And I think the love that is being spoken about here is a love that is higher than other loves. A love that is rooted and grounded in who God is and how he loves. And if this love is derived from God, if this particular way of thinking about love is derived from God, it makes sense that it's only available to those who are members of his family. And that says that if we love God, we are able to enter into a deeper experience and appreciation of love than anybody else. And the guys were sharing earlier of how they experience God's love in powerful ways. But I think that does lead us on to two questions. What is this love like? What do we know about it? And then how should we respond to it? Well, we get lots of answers to that first question in this passage. Verse 7 tells us that love comes from God. But then it goes on to tell us lots of other things. We are told twice, in verse 8 and verse 16, that God is love. A statement about God's character, and a statement about what God does. The Bible tells us many things about God. He's the creator of everything. He's a righteous judge. He's a strong warrior, a great king, an eternal being. He's supremely powerful. He's totally light. We were thinking about that last week. He's holy. We're thinking about that next week. And these are all true. Some of the aspects of God that we need to recognize and take into account. But behind it all, in it all, we see that God is love. Everything he does flows from that. Everything he does is consistent with that. Everything he does demonstrates it. We might look at some of the things that God is spoken about as doing in the Bible. We might think about some of the experiences we have in life and struggle to reconcile those with this idea that God is love and everything he does flows from that. But the fact that God is love challenges us to do so and to try and understand how what he is doing is a consequence of his love. And that may be difficult. Hugely difficult when we're going through situations that are difficult and demanding. But what this passage tells us, that in that, even in that, God is love. It's similar in a small way to how a young child may not fully understand how some of his loving parents' actions towards him are motivated by her deep love for him. I have deep and total confidence that flows from the reality that everything God does is from a place of love. It doesn't mean life is easy, but it means we can live in relationship with, we can serve, we can be part of the family of somebody who is totally and completely love. And as Dave was reminding us earlier, will never let us down. God is love. And the next verses go on to speak about how God demonstrated this love to us. He sent his only son so that we might live. He sent this son as a sacrifice to atone for, to pay for, to deal with our sins. God demonstrates his love by choosing to not stay away from the messiness of life in this world, but by sending his only son, the son with whom he had existed in a relationship of total and complete love for all eternity. He was prepared for this son to leave him to go into the world that he had created, but we had messed up. Even knowing how his son would be treated and how he would eventually be killed. This was the sacrifice God was prepared to make for us. It was the sacrifice the Son was prepared to make for us, and it led Jesus, God's Son, to a Roman cross just outside Jerusalem. And on that cross, he died. And as he died, he dealt with the problem of our sin. He atoned for our sins. He offered himself so that we might live and be drawn back into a relationship with God. This shows something of the extent and the depth of God's love and the unique character of it. But this love is also a transforming love. We are made complete in that love. We are being made like Jesus. This love changes people as it works itself out in their lives. It is sent out from God, and verse 12 tells us that its target is people like you and me. It is in us that it finds its completion. We can offer people things, our friendship, our time, our support, our abilities, whatever it is. But unless they receive it and start to make use of it, it doesn't have any impact. It has potential, but it doesn't achieve anything. Just as in a torch where the battery provides the potential of producing light, but nothing happens until you press the button, you turn the torch on. God's love is offered to each one of us. And as we receive it, it finds itself complete. And as daughters and sons of God, we are being changed to become more like Jesus. So God's love is amazingly deep, but it's also amazingly transformative. It changes us. It brings us into the image of his own Son when we allow it to really work in our lives. And he goes on, there is no fear in love. Andy was talking about that earlier when he shared his experiences in that hospital room. That yes, he didn't know what was going to happen with this treatment, but there was no fear. Because he knew and experienced God's love. But John here is talking about a different sort of reason for fear. There it was to do with treatment. Here it's to do with punishment. And if we know we've done something wrong, if we are caught and sentenced, as happened to that young man that Dave was referring to earlier, we know that judgment is going to come. And that can make us understandably fearful and apprehensive. But knowing that we are totally and conditionally and unconditionally and completely living in the reality of God's love changes that. Because we know that ultimately and finally we are safe and secure in his love. Whatever may happen to us, whatever we may go through. So these are some of the ways in which this divine, this godly love is described. Something that is based on the very nature of God. Something that led him to send his son to die for us. Something that changes us to be more like Jesus. Something that helps us to not be afraid. So that's some of the ways in which this love is described. But what we also see is that God has done something about this love. It's moved beyond a feeling to an action. And three times in this passage, it speaks about God loving us. This is love, not that we love God, but that he loved us. We saw this when looking at one of the aspects of God's love, that it caused him to act. And this action was sending his son. Not just a feeling, but it resulted in God doing something to deal with the problem of sin. God acted in love. And we read twice more about God acting in love. And both times we see that it's intended to produce a response. Since God loved us, we also ought to love one another. Because God loved us in such a way, because God loved us so deeply, we are called to love one another. We're not called to love each other, to care for each other, to be nice to each other, because we like each other. Now, that's a bonus, I guess. We're called to do this as a response to God's love for us. Not because people are lovely, but because they're loved. That's what God is looking for. We love because he first loved us. Because of his love towards us, we are called to respond in love. And this is again talking about loving each other. Because God has loved us. So how do we respond? How do we respond to this love? And this theme is developed time and time again in this short passage, that the result of God loving us is not so much that we should love him, but so that we should love each other. This is not to say that loving God is not important. It is of primary importance. As we see when Jesus summarizes the law as love God and love your neighbor. But in this passage, loving God is pretty much assumed. And the focus is on how we should love each other as a consequence of that. And this is emphasized in lots and lots of different ways. Here are some of them. If you look through the verses, these are reasons for us to love each other. Because God has loved us. Because we know God. Because God is in us. And if God is in us, that should change the way in which we act towards each other. Again, we love because he loved us. And so we love each other as a consequence of what he has done. Verse 20 tells us that we can't actually, really and truly say that we love God unless we love each other. Oh, he commanded us to do so. We love him, and so we love his children. One flows to the other. We are obedient to his commands. Eight reasons given as to why, because of God's love, we are to love each other. Let's look at one particularly. The end of chapter 4 and the beginning of chapter 5 goes on to say something quite powerful. If we claim to love God, yet hate a brother or sister, we are liars. If we don't love each other, people that we've seen, people that we know, we can't love God. Being accused of being a liar is challenging. I don't like it when it happens. But this is not the first time it's been raised in this letter. Three different aspects of lying are spoken about. Don't forget, this is written to a group of people who are trusting and believing in God, and three times they're asked to think about whether they are living as liars. And three different reasons are given, described as lying. In chapter 1 and chapter 2, it talks about knowing God, saying that we know God, but living in disobedience to him. Saying, yes, I am a child of God, I am following God, I am doing, I love God, but I'm not going to do what he says. That's described as lying. Chapter 2 goes on to say, one of the things that people do is to deny the deity of Jesus, to say that, yeah, Jesus was a good man, but he was not God's son. And people were doing that in the context in which this letter was being written, and that's one of the reasons the letter was written, to address that. And it's saying that if that's what you're saying, you are a liar. And here it says that if we don't love our brothers and sisters, we are lying. So one to do with morality, one to do with faith, one to do with how we engage with each other. And what this writer is pointing out is that if we claim to be Christians, if we claim to be following Jesus, while at the same time continuing to fail in these ways, we are deceiving ourselves. We're not deceiving God. We might not be deceiving anybody else. We might be, but we're not deceiving God. We are deceiving ourselves. And then there's this thing about loving our brothers and sisters whom we have seen, those whom we spend time with on a regular basis, those whose lives we are linked with, people where we know something of the challenges they face. And if we don't extend love to these people, when we know the difficulties when they're going through, how can we think that we can really love God? Because it's not primarily about feeling, it's about acting towards people in a way that demonstrates that love. If, verse 1 of chapter 5 says, we love God, we will love his children. Someone I was very close to and somebody who helped me a lot when I was studying at Manchester University quite some years ago was somebody who was quite a bit older than me. He was 20 years older than me. He had three young children, ranging from about 5 to about 12. And because of my relationship with him, these children were important to me. They were special to me. I picked them up from various places when they were been visiting various things. I took them home. They were included in conversation. I was interested in what they were doing. I remember sometimes having the responsibility of taking them to a church service, and I'd be sitting there and there'd be these two or three children with me, and I was responsible for them. Because of my relationship with him, they were important to me. They knew I was there for them if I was needed. My friendship with their father affected how I thought about these children. And that's the point that's being made here. If we recognise God's love for us, the love that he's displayed in so many powerful ways, if that is something that we understand and believe in, if we respond to him in love, then the inescapable consequence is that he loves the other members of his family, our sisters and brothers as well. Each of us will have many opportunities to demonstrate that love to each other. We have the opportunity, we have God's love in our lives. Do we have the desire? Do we have the deep desire to express and to demonstrate that love to each other as a response to God's love to us, and as an indication of the change that God has made and continues to make in our lives? Dear friends, it says in verse 11, since God so loved us, we also ought to love one another. That's the challenge. God has poured his love into our lives. And because of that, we're called to love one another. How are we going to respond to that? Are we going to pick up his challenge and live as loved people of God, demonstrating his love to those whom he has loved and brought into relationship with him?